ear pen here. Anyway, we are here between Labor Day and the Victorian Anarchist Book Fair next weekend and 9/11 next weekend. Speaking of 9/11, I think we're going to be seeing a branding weekend, a marketing opportunity for the corporations. By the way, you might have noticed this, various takes. Do you know why it's doing that?
No, it's fine with me.
It wasn't a minute ago. There we go. Anyway, we sold drone. I'm talking about the takes on the 9/11 site, in terms of the responders early on and later who worked there. It indicates that the death toll among those which will end up being a higher number than that of those who died on 9/11 in terms of lung cancer, respiratory diseases, other diseases, from all that asbestos and lead and plastics and everything. That's kind of a macabre thing piled onto the other macabre thing. Well, let's just start right out. You might have guessed what I'm going to start right out with. Yesterday in West Virginia, suspect kills 5, then kills 7 at a home in West Virginia. Yeah, this is just yesterday. All were shot with a high-power rifle. 22-year-old suspect. And today, this morning, 4 dead in Carson City, Nevada. 11 were shot altogether, including 5 uniformed National Guardsmen sitting at an IHOP restaurant. 2 of those 5 were shot to death. And this month, that is August, was the deadliest for Americans in the Afghan War, the nearly 10-year-old war, which began on October 8th, 2001. And the fires. This is late summer. There are wildfires. There are going to be wildfires in California, for example. It's just a routine, actually. And the severely drought-stricken situation in Texas, I think it's over 1,000 homes burned already. And the typhoon, this is Sunday's news, more than 20 are killed in central Japan. And that's a record. 50 or so are missing. They tried to evacuate about 500,000, record amount of rain in western and central Japan. All kinds of stuff like that. As the weather veers back and forth, oscillating wildly, August was the wettest month by far for New York City. Broke the record by over 2 inches. 18, almost 19 inches in the month. And here's another thing from New York, upstate New York, about a small town on a floodplain up in the Catskills. There have been 3 so-called 100-year inundations. That hasn't happened in 100 years kind of thing. And these three, all since 1996, have struck the same area in the Catskills. So the piece in the New York Times questioning the wisdom of rebuilding again. So there's a conclusion about there that this area is not habitable. But of course, that's a function of modernity. If things weren't arranged in a certain way, of course it would be habitable. But we're talking permanent structures in the wrong place and all that. I bet the original inhabitants didn't have a problem. They didn't say, the water comes up. This is uninhabitable. We're going to have to just abandon this whole area. And, all that kind of thing. There have been, so far this year, a record 10 weather catastrophes, each costing at least $1 billion. They're talking about FEMA, the Federal Emergency Fund thing on the government level, running out of money. It just keeps stacking up. It called an exhausting disaster year for the U.S. on the weekend. Well, I mentioned last week, hard not to mention, the Obama regime's decision about the Keystone XL pipeline, the wonderful idea of all the worst kind of crude oil from the tar sands project in Canada down through the U.S., really wasn't a question. Here's a good letter. I'm going to read part of this letter in the local paper, the Register Guard, for Saturday. As they're talking about the editorial, the RG editorial questioning the decision by the White House. As the editorial points out, the pipeline itself is an environmental disaster waiting to happen. It would cross not only rivers and farmland, but the Ogallala Aquifer, one of our largest freshwater reservoirs. The tar sands extraction site in Alberta is a major environmental disaster already happening. Google the photographs of it. It is a scraping away of forest approximately one quarter the size of Lane County. Has our country lost all sense of shame? Is the new golden rule, do whatever you want, because if you don't, somebody else will. But even if the extraction site were on another planet, and even if the refined petroleum miraculously appeared at your local gas station without a pipeline, the ultimate problem would remain. The carbon coming out of our tailpipes and factories is changing the composition of the Earth's atmosphere. If Obama approves the pipeline, well, that's a done deal. It will signify complete denial of global warming and a commitment by this country to lead the lemming march toward extinction. Signed, Jerry C. Rosemeyer. Not too bad. And not to be upstaged by that decision, at the end of the week, the very same government decided that ozone is okay. We don't need any new regulation. And even the Wall Street Journal depicted this as a complete cave-in. They're diluting the Environmental Protection Agency function or oversight, such as it is. And probably it's predicting that the same thing is going to happen in terms of, for example, mercury. As they abandon any stricter limit on air pollution. I mean, it's obviously a setback for the environment and for public health. If anybody's still surprised, it's... But here's... we have to close. I'm saving the biggest news for last. You will remember about a month ago the news of synthetic meat from Japan.
Oh, yes.
The poop burger. The, yes. Meat from human feces. Well, it turns out that the Japanese researcher and the company, the firm that he's supposedly a part of, neither of which have anything to do with food research at all, so it seems like it was a joke. Yeah, this company, what do they do? Something has nothing to do with food. Well, it's a good idea. I mean, that probably they'll succeed. Somebody else will. I've been working on the Bronze Age, just thought I'd share this. Mainly the question of whether or not I might refine this as things go along, but a question is to me whether civilization is pretty much complete from the start, and I suggest it is, but I don't know. It's going to take a while to try to explore this. And another question is, how recent is mass society? And it could be that mass society started in the Bronze Age. Again, subject to a lot of readings. And we'll see what happens. Anyway, if you if you can help me with that, then it'd be fine. Well, late last week, this is another interesting thing. And I think I would like to say it generally supports the idea that some of us have pursued, that everything gets pushed further back in terms of human capacities, in terms of what we were doing. I explored this to some degree in the essay, How We Used to Be, which goes back to the earliest human species, Homo habilis and Homo erectus, especially erectus, and way before symbolic culture. Well, this latest thing, and this comes on, I think it was announced on Thursday in the journal Nature. Let me put it this way. Earliest stone technology, earliest stone tools don't show a lot of craftsmanship, shall we say. That's the Oldowan style. And then much later came the Acheulean. That's the name of the design of stone tools. Well, it was thought that the move to more sophisticated ones with the finer workmanship, more symmetry, more balance, that sort of thing. You can see it instantly in the, if you look at the pictures of the artifacts. Previous dates were ranged from 1.4 million years ago to 1.6 million years ago. That's a long time ago, but the latest find from a site near Lake Turkana in Kenya, Eastern Africa, show 1.76 million years ago, significantly further back. With the clear signs of symmetry, uniformity, planning, this is the oldest Acheulean site in the world. And who knows, there might be older ones coming down the line later. And we know that at that point, basically, humans already had modern proportions. They look kind of like us. Not that that's the most important thing, I suppose. It moves us further and further back that Homo erectus made the Acheulean hand axes and picks and these other things that show this kind of sophistication. A lot we'll never know, but I found that pretty fascinating. And Burning Man is going on. We're going to hear from Mark, maybe not tonight because he's still there, but the Wall Street Journal on Saturday, interesting piece. What started out with the big emphasis on self-reliance, radical self-reliance was the watchword. Now you got these camps where if you've got thousands of dollars, you can get a very deluxe camper thing. The excess, various people are talking about this. But it's okay because they also stress radical inclusion. So for the rich who want to have people cook their food and they live and they're staying in an air-conditioned RV while other people are sweating and dirty in their tents, that's the way it's going. And yeah, it seems to be just fine. The director, they refer to this guy, Musk, he's in charge of the organization that runs Burning Man, referring to Mr. Musk's luxury RV dwelling camp. He says, it's not super easy. The air conditioner is not on all the time. Wow, there you go. Burning Man marches on.
Can you see that devolving into just like a whole group of people that meet in the desert and circle up the RVs and just hang out twittering each other?
Yeah, it looks like it's going that way.
So we had a Bebo comment a moment ago.
Go ahead, please. I'm just seeing if the other headphones are not buzzing
in my ear. You're having a lot of buzz, huh?
Yeah, in this one, in the right ear pan. Huh. Go ahead, Noah.
Okay. Well, Amiiboer says he's read two of your books, and he'd like to get your take on Emil Durkheim and Thorsten Veblen.
Durkheim and who?
Veblen.
Ah. Well, let me just take Veblen. That's because I think he's really important. You know, it seems to me a key idea that he had was that it is division of labor or specialization that creates what he called organic unity. And to me, that's making a virtue out of the negative trend, if you will, the fact of what drives mass society at its most basic level. But since he's okay with mass society, with industrialism and the whole course of mass production society, he turn that around. And he argued that people are dependent on each other, and it's beneficial because it does create community. I think that's a real key thing. But you know, at the same time, Durkheim studied the new cities, the new industrial cities, and he pointed out, his studies showed, oh, very good. Well, the buzz is gone. Thank you.
It's kind of precarious.
Oh, okay. Well, it's fine now.
Thank you. The problem, though.
Ah. Carl always sees the problem.
Bit?
He knows and he sees all.
You want to live without the headphones for a minute?
Okay. Well, he was studying suicide and craziness, severe mental and emotional problems, and he found that they rose sharply with the advent of industrial cities in the 19th century in France. Veblen, I haven't read Veblen in a while. I think he's less important in terms of basic stuff, but anyway, thanks for your call, or your Amiibo. We're having a little technical thing. Well, we'll just kind of move on. Carl's always there to patch things together. this is the ad of the week. And it's not some corporate energy company or high-tech outfit. It's Carl. It's the Carl Karcher Enterprises Incorporated. In other words, Carl's Jr. Yes, it is. Well, yeah, Carl's Jr.
Yeah.
The ad is, it shows a chicken burger, the new hand-breaded chicken filet sandwich. It's hand-breaded because we love you.
Oh, yeah.
There it is. Yeah, that's the goofiest one I noticed this week. It now costs $25 to visit someone in the prison system of Arizona, Arizona Department of Corrections. Yeah, they're just piling up the fascist, the new racist, ugly things down there as fast as you can. And of course, they're meeting with opposition. Everybody knows that if people get visits, it's good for them, it's good for their future and all that sort of stuff, but yeah, let's squeeze these people who often have to travel long distances and maybe don't have a lot of extra money, shall we say. Let's soak them. Let's see if we can, see if we can avoid the... I'm not getting anything.
Oh, no. How about
let's see. How about that? Oh, yes. Carl. Carl is a wizard. He definitely is a wizard. Here in Oregon, this is not here in Oregon, but about a month ago or so, there was a strange orange-colored goo that was washing up on the shores of Alaska. This is northwest Alaska. Didn't know what it was. Well, it was killing fish. Well, it's discovered to have been, or is, microscopic eggs, fungal spores, to put it more succinctly. That's what the microscopic eggs are. Nobody knows where that comes from. Here we've got beaches contaminated, Central Oregon beaches. We've got the lakes contaminated with toxic algae blooms. And that happens in the late summer too, but one wonders when this wasn't happening. Well, Labor Day, maybe I'll just get into this briefly. Don't talk about labor all that much. Of course, the Verizon strike was, well, it went away. People went back to work about a week ago or so. And I was thinking of what happened in Wisconsin in the spring when the state government tried to take away the union's collective bargaining rights. And, of course, the people on the left got very excited and salivated over that, talked about the general strike. And they're still talking about it as if it was a giant... upheaval, just a blast of new energy. And I'm not sure why. That was a complete debacle. There was nothing. They were within a million miles of a general strike. Speaking of that, there may be strikes at Ford. There may be strikes among the grocery workers at Southern California. And last Thursday, thousands of nurses protested in 21 states. Concerning the how Wall Street gets away with everything and is not taxed, and this is a political and a labor demonstration of some size. Well, all that's happening, it's not happening so much as you might think. In some places this was a while back, this is only about 2 weeks ago or so, there were exchange students in Pennsylvania who somehow were employed at Hershey's and allied companies there, Hershey's Chocolate. Several hundred international exchange students who walked off their job last week, who were just amazed and appalled at the slavish conditions that anyone would put up with it. And it was quite embarrassing because this was a foreign student program, a cultural exchange, if you will. Horrible factory work that they completely rejected. And I guess you could say, well, it goes to the slavish nature of American workers, where people are militant all over the world, but not in the U.S. It's kind of a mystery. It really kind of is. I've known people over the years who take pride in how they never complain, and they're injured, and they keep working, and, you know, they don't do anything. It's just a cultural thing. I mean, maybe somebody can I'm pretty well versed in American labor history. It wasn't always that way. But, and I don't know, there are a lot of cultural differences. It's kind of hard to make the comparison. But, yeah, it took these foreign students who couldn't put up with this at all, and were just amazed by it. Well, there was a study last Monday about exiting workers, U.S. workers, they're more disgruntled than ever in terms of exit interview data aggregated by the Corporate Executive Board Company, which is a research and advisory services firm. So there is unhappiness on that level. And we know that now productivity is slumping, and that's often interesting. That's output per hour. It's how hard people are working, and it's also what is the technology in place for them to produce, be producing more or less per hour. And that has dropped. But when it was going up, the American workers weren't profiting from it. They didn't benefit from the rising productivity. And just one other thing, I don't know where this is going exactly, but you know, there are all these articles about how if people are happier, they work harder. I mean, it's transparently true that none of these people care whether they're happy. They just wonder about the outcome. Do they, you know, here's one. This Sunday's New York Times. Employees' apathy and disengagement cost American businesses a fortune. So how do you get them to be happier? And that's, well, studies go back, you know, decades and decades and decades. How to rig that, how to engineer that. And last Tuesday in the Wall Street Journal, coffee break, walk in the park, why unwinding is hard. We wanted people to be able to get a break to refresh themselves for further work. What is the optimal mental refreshment, according to this article by Shirley Wang last week? Here's an answer, part of the suggestions that some of these people at the University of Michigan came up with. Take a break for 10 minutes in a quiet room to look at pictures of nature. Wow. Gee, that's... even if you can't go outside at all, you can't even go into a garden or a park, you know, you can look at a picture of it and then get back to work. Yeah, this whole thing. I probably don't pay enough of attention to all that stuff. There's a lot there and a lot that isn't there. Well, let's take a music break. And by the way, 541-346-0645.
Oh,
We are. We're back. We're back with action news and related stuff. A bomb went off. This was posted last Tuesday. It's not exactly clear when it happened, but at a Moscow police station as Russian anarchists fight back against state brutality. That's why this happened. It shattered windows, allegedly thrown by a passerby who managed to run away after the action. Assailants also set fire to a number of police vehicles parked near the Central Police Department of the Moscow satellite city, Khimki, last Tuesday. This was reported in Russia Today. And Saturday, September 3rd, Anonymous released a massive dump of emails onto the internet. This one in particular is about Texas law enforcement. And, of course, you could figure that there'd be a lot of violent, racist, ugly stuff in there. And there was, and it's been way exposed. It also has to do with the arrest of the de facto leader, Topiary. So they're striking back. This is just one example of that. Saturday night, the biggest demonstration in Israel's history. Hard to say where this is going, but more than 400,000 took to the streets. Didn't get to the million that some of the organizers were projecting. Tel Aviv and other cities. About the way things are going. The Arab Spring, the Arab summer and fall is to some degree affecting Israel even. Has to do with corruption, high cost of living, and things like that. Early Sunday morning, late Saturday night in Fresno, a Fresno cop's home is firebombed. Second time an officer has been the target of a fire starter in less than 3 weeks. So as a woman officer, unidentified, says an arsonist struck several times. There were several Molotovs thrown into the house, causing both external and internal fire damage. That's a boarded-up house in northwest Fresno. And Iran, they're having the big crackdown because they're also threatened by what's been going on across North Africa and from one end of the Middle East to another. I thought this was kind of funny. It was in today's New York Times. It's part of this general counter moves. Iranian officials warned Monday that counter-revolutionaries from abroad were behind the flash mobs of young people who have been holding boisterous water gun fights in public parks across the country, so the theocracy is threatened by squirt guns. So they're freaking out. Here's a little announcement. Don't have a whole lot of action stuff here. Barricades, a play of insurrections past and coming, will be performed up in Vancouver, B.C. Thursday night, September the 8th at 6:30 p.m. sharp. The social war of which the Paris Commune was one moment is still being fought today. You can read about it at agitproptheater.wordpress.com. They're also going to be performing on Saturday night at the Victoria Anarchist Book Fair. In fact, right after I do my thing there in late afternoon. This is going to be fun. I know somebody involved with this, and I bet it's going to be great. By the way, just want to say it again. I didn't say anything last week. I forgot. But this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, up in Victoria, the 6th annual Anarchist Book Fair, I was so impressed. I was talking to my friend here about that, the range of workshops, the exciting workshops. I actually can't think of a better lineup of stuff for the 2 days, all from tree spiking to being allies in indigenous struggles, and I should have written it out, but it's a whole lot of stuff. You can just go to Victoria Anarchist Book Fair and read up on the whole thing, what's on offer and when over the 2 days. Like, they're already doing stuff. They've got a big... They've had a number of films and discussions, and going to miss a lot of that, but I'll be up there Saturday or Friday night. Well, here's an article by Noam Chomsky that just appeared in These Times. After 9/11, was war the only option? I mean, right there. Let's start right there. What's really best for the U.S.? You know, maybe the White House and the Pentagon need this guy. You know, he's pointing out the bad consequences of making war after 9/11. It was less than a month that the U.S. started bombing Afghanistan. Kind of amazing. I mean, the whole slant of it is weird. And I was thinking of James Scott at Yale and his work. This guy's an anarchist, unlike David Graeber, who taught at Yale before he was kicked out. Scott wrote Seeing Like a State, that came out in 98. He really has wonderful analysis, both theoretically and historically. Then his new book, well, it's not so new anymore, it's a year or so old, The Art of Not Being Governed, An Anarchist History of Uplands Southeast Asia, which has to do with an area, parts of seven countries, in which for 2,000 years people have not wanted state control, have fled it, have resisted it, have squirmed away from it and found strategies all this time to defend their indigenous cultures and not wanting to be part of the political dimension. Of course, Chomsky would find that horrendously bad that people would have that attitude. And the this is over now, I'm sure, but at the White House and some other places, I mentioned this in passing, there have been 1,252 people arrested, and this has to do with the tar sands pipeline. It's about putting the president on the spot. This is Bill McKibben again. He comments on the quote baffling decision of Obama in terms of the pipeline, in terms of the decision about the ozone levels. How could this guy be baffled? I mean, what a nitwit you must be to be baffled. Are you just still an idiot liberal? Well, the answer is obvious. He says the 1,252 arrests mark the biggest civil disobedience campaign about anything in this century. Of course, this century is only 11 years old, but still. And what is the... what was accomplished? What were you thinking? And Eric Jensen has an article in the current Earth Island Journal, Can't Buy Me Change. And it's he's critiquing... I mean, it's a low level of critique. It's got to be an Earth Island Journal, which for one thing has never printed a word about resistance. This is a rather long column about it's demolishing the idea of the green economy, that green consumerism is some important move. Anyway, it's as far as that goes, it's okay. But that's the level for that. And I guess you would say it's part of the phenomenon of leaving the civilization discourse at the door. And vis-a-vis what I brought up last week, I think I'm going to wade into that once more. This is from the Deep Green Resistance website. It has something to do with Jensen going to the FBI and the police about online death threats. And on the website it says, never talk to police officers, FBI, etc. You know, by the way, people that refer to the pigs as police officers, there's a deep respect there. There's respect there. You use that term as opposed to cops or pigs or something. Right there, to me, that's a tip-off. Train yourself, other activists, and your friends on these guidelines. It doesn't matter whether you are guilty or innocent. It doesn't matter how smart you are. Never talk to police officers, FBI, Homeland Security, etc. It doesn't matter if you believe you are telling police officers what they already know. It doesn't matter if you just chit-chat with police officers. Any talking to police officers, FBI, etc., will almost certainly harm you or others. Well, that doesn't apply to the bosses of DGR, does it? It doesn't apply to Jensen or Lierre Keith, who don't hesitate to talk to them There's a little note of irony there. And I'm going to read something from my friend Cliff, who's sometimes down here behind the microphone. And, you know, my point at the end of the show, there was Amiibo message that suggested I was going overboard, and by going overboard, I kind of undid the points I was making. And my reply, if I remember correctly, was, check it out. Just go to Vancouver Media Co-op and listen to it yourself if you think I'm spinning it or not doing justice to it. Anyway, Cliff writes, I listened to the whole Derek Jensen interview. Amazing. He and Urban Scout is a Portland guy. And two peas in the same pod. It is less about anarchist ideological purity, as they are quick to use as a shield against any criticism, and more about personal integrity. I don't see how either one of them can straddle the fence as leaders of some sort of opposition to civilization and then go crying to the police or FBI, who are there to enforce the rules of civilization when things don't go as they want. That seems pretty clear. Can you honestly call for the downfall of civilization and think that nobody's going to want you dead? People get killed over parking spaces and being cut off in traffic. Death threats were even made against Esperanza Spalding, a Portland jazz singer and bassist, when she beat out Justin Bieber for the Best New Artist Grammy. But the Spanish anarchist supposedly used police squad, so that makes it okay. He's one step away, maybe not even that far away, from justifying the NKVD/KGB existing to protect the leaders of the revolution. Maybe he should just file for restraining orders against people who disagree with him, or file suit for libel or slander every time someone disagrees with what comes out of his mouth. Oh, yeah, that's the gist of it. That's sad but true. Well done, Cliff. I'm going to wind up this stuff with... I think Anarchist News and InfoShop both carried a Washington Post piece that came out late last week in the Washington Post. And I don't have her name. There's a long piece about something called the People Against Poverty and Apathy Festival that was held recently, about 500 people. This is Christian anarchists. And according to Andy Lewis, whom I'm going to quote here in a minute, it wasn't just anarchists or primitivists. It was also kind of a pan-leftist array of people. People wanting community. A lot of talk about community, skill shares, feral Christianity, according to some. And she notices the tendency, the kind of upsurge in intentional communities among these Christian anarchists. She says technology and civilization are evils. I guess her main hit was that was the dominant thing there. And you know, she refers to these dozens of new Christian startups in terms of communities. And she interviews several people. She talked to Andy Lewis, a friend of mine, a very strong anarcho-primitivist Christian. He's the drummer for the Illogical Spoon, one word. Excuse me. She writes, is minding a nearby table of anarchist pamphlets and CDs. He lives in a decrepit old farmhouse in Jackson, Michigan, restores oak savannas for a living, and believes that the Book of Genesis is a political text in that it is about the world's fall from paradise to civilization. Paradise was Earth's original status, he says, when we existed as hunter-gatherers. But the advent of agriculture, symbolized by Cain, the grower of fruits and vegetables, as well as Adam's disgraced son, drove mankind toward technology, division of labor, and hierarchy. The last, which symbolizes obedience to power, is anathema to these anarchists. Very anti-authoritarian bunch, and he was there, of course, and he spoke to her, and he told me he thought it was a pretty decent piece, although she wasn't convinced about the primitivist stuff. But a somewhat in-depth piece on that topic. Well, nobody's calling us. It's 541-346-0645. Hey, Carl's checking the phone. It's working. It's not working?
Works fine.
It works fine. All right. Well, let's just get into some techno-industrial stuff here. Get some goodies. In the middle of the week, let's see. Yeah, last week, Japan finds radiation spread over a wide area. The first comprehensive survey of soil contamination from the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant. Much greater amounts of cesium and other potent radioactive things. I don't know if they're hiding this. They're not exactly hiding it, but it was news just kind of dribbles out. And somewhat nearby, Apple is facing more environmental attacks in China over their supplier plants and how toxic and polluting they are, these suppliers for the nice Apple products. And China is also unhappy about the Conoco Corporation and the oil leaks in Bohai Bay recently. And the oil corporation is saying, oh, it's not so bad, these leaks. So, I think there's probably a tendency, well, China, they don't have any environmental protection, and yet it isn't the Chinese that are doing these things. Okay, I guess we're going to have a call. Meanwhile, well, we'll get back to this. Oh, we have a caller.
Yeah, we got Steve here.
Hi, Steve.
Hi there.
How you doing?
Oh, doing pretty good. I was watching a movie with some anarcho-primitivist friends, the Army of Shadows, about the French Resistance. Oh. And what occurred to me is they were talking about the number of people who have turned in prison, that, you know, that the FBI got them to turn. And the movie was about the extreme torture and, you know, and horror and death that some of these people face. Some of them didn't turn. And what we're talking about was how there seems to be a lack of support or something, you know, that I was asking if I could do anything, and they mentioned prisoner support. And I wondered about this because if just the threat of some internment or prison could play such havoc, and I'm not talking that I'm such a brave man, you know. I mean, I don't like to deal with, you know, the law. I don't like to deal with, you know, any of that, you know. But perhaps when we're talking about a community, that there's a sense where these people know that, you know, that there's a community out there for them. Somehow it seems that people turned into snitches, people turned into, you know, betrayers of their friends, and you know, I don't know. Could you discuss this about what we could do or what I could do to help contact these people or support them or let them know, you know, you're not alone. What you did is appreciated. I don't know what to do about that, but it seems to be, you know.
Well,
it,
you know,
seems to be a real.
Yeah, that's. I think that's real crucial, and the folks I've talked to that have been imprisoned, that it means a huge amount to get a letter saying just that. I mean, to do just that, I think is real key. It's just to take the time to do that and just let people know that they're respected and supported and admired for their courage, and that we know they're there and we haven't forgotten about them. And you know, there are a number of good websites in terms of ELF, ALF, or what have you. I think it's pretty hard, and you know, if you want to correspond with people or just at least send them a note, sometimes I send a book to somebody or another. And you know, this past weekend, Saturday, Alice and I were visiting a friend who's at Pelican Bay State Prison in California, the most maximum place, and I brought up the prisoner, the hunger strike there at Pelican Bay in the SHU, in the security housing. And
yeah,
he's on the main line, but you know, them knowing, insofar as they did know, and others at other prisons knew that there was above ground support, that people were having solidarity demos, you know, these noise demos and what have you, is very encouraging. It's apparently, I mean, from what I've been told, I mean, that's very key.
Gotcha. If you could maybe mention these or some of the websites or some of the places to go to get involved with this?
Why? Offhand. I don't have a list offhand. Gosh, I'm...
Okay.
I'm blanking a little bit. I can think of a few names, but I think there are... Well, like Walter Bond, there's a website. I mean, it's for some of these people who are facing real hard time, they do have websites and give you the address and the registration number so that you can write. So, and maybe tell you what the regs are if you wanted to send something. Often that's not very, they don't make that easy often. And or even visits, you know, what I mean, if there's somebody near you maybe or something like that, I mean... but just dropping a line, I've heard over and over how important that is. How that strengthens people who are just in a bad situation, and that it's very hard to even imagine if you're not in there.
Yeah, I believe you. You know, it's you know, I'm a terminal good boy. So, you know, I appreciate the courage of the direct action people. So yeah, I will support them.
Yeah. You could, if you want to write to me. At JZ Primitivo, one word, at Gmail, I could easily get a few, you know, website addresses together.
Okay, thank you.
Feel free, yeah. Hey, thanks for calling, Steve.
Okay, John.
Take care.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Ask and you shall receive. We got a phone call.
Yeah, right away. Yeah, that's nice. Some people kind of wait toward the later innings to do it. Okay, well, just to follow up here while we have the time, in terms of health, in terms of the high-tech culture out there, the electric cars may be about to really be unrolled on an industrial level with their depleted battery packs. And some of these, for electric cars, they weigh 550 pounds or more. So the question is, all this stuff enters the waste stream, shall we say, what happens to all that? And there's no nice answer to that yet, strangely enough, but that's part of the picture. Scientists in the U.S. have warned NASA that the amount of so-called space junk orbiting the Earth is at a tipping point. This is from the National Research Council. All this debris could destroy the valuable satellites, for one thing, and everything. So much is dependent on satellites and the interconnected web of satellites. One goes out and the whole thing starts to unravel. You know, stuff like that that we don't think about. There's so much of this orbital rubbish. You know, it's amazing that that's now at that kind of a level. Oh, and more, remember the dino mice, the combination mice and dinosaurs with the dinosaur snout sort of thing the other day? Well, now, this is from naturalnews.org. 150 animal-human hybrid embryos have been produced by mad scientists in the UK. That was from the UK.
Mad scientist.
Yes, yes, not to put too fine a point on it. And as was reported before, the embryos aren't allowed to grow very far. They have to be destroyed after 14 days. But we're talking about mammals here. And, you know, injecting animal cells. And the thing, in this case, the animal-human hybrid, you know, mice, dinosaur, well, that's creepy and everything else. But, I mean, human-animal hybrid is...
Dr. Moreau.
Is what?
The island of Dr. Moreau.
Oh, right, exactly. Oh, yes. And they're also working now on bulletproof skin. Yeah, so you can have your wars without, you know, worrying about
without getting hurt. Great.
You got your clones and drones and bulletproof skin and all kinds of other freaky stuff for mad scientists. Thank you, Natural News. Okay, I'm loving the, sometimes I mention this, not recently, but the side effects. And the TV commercials are lovely. They roll out some nice misty look view. It'll save your life. And then they're forced to give the side effects. Of course, you may have heart attacks, cancer, suicide, and they list all these things. It's almost hilarious. But here's the Avastin, the drug Avastin, with corporation. Oh, it's from Genentech. Avastin is for eye disease. You get Avastin injections for macular degeneration, I think, mainly. Well, there have been reports that Avastin causes blindness. So that's what you want in a drug that heals eye disease. Yeah, 5 more reports on Avastin injections causing blindness. And just today, common inflammatory drugs such as ibuprofen and naproxen may increase the chance of miscarriage by more than 100%. It more than doubles the rate of miscarriage for women, based on a study of nearly 50,000 Canadian women. Hmm. Yeah, just due to simple technology, you know, drug technologies. And the kind of perennial thing about antibiotic resistance, you know, resistance to antibiotics. I mean, this has been found in ancient DNA. In other words, there's something that resists this kind of intervention, where we're always trying to overcome something, and they've had to conclude the fact that the genes for resistance are so ancient and widespread means that there is no easy solution to the problem of resistance. We will never invent a super antibiotic that is immune to resistance. So how about that? Okay, 2 more things, and this is just today from Reuters. This is kind of amazing. Almost 165 million Europeans, or 38% of the population, suffer from mental and or neurological illnesses. This is a 3-year study covering 30 European countries, another very widespread one. And this Dr. Witchen in charge of it says, the future has arrived early. Wow, he's implying that, we're all going to be nuts under this stress of the insanity we're enduring. This is amazing. Almost 40% of Europeans have mental illness. Whoa. And this is a sad one. I guess we'll end with this one. Yeah, why not? It's sad. I mean, it definitely is sad. Somebody named Trey Pennington, who was a big, he was a mind behind social networking. He co-founded Like Minds, and he had a lot to do with another one, a website called Foursquare that was oriented to mobile devices. I mean, he had a hand in a lot of stuff. He had 111,386 friends, and he killed himself Sunday morning outside of a Greenville, South Carolina church. And the report, I don't know where this comes from, but shows that even someone with 111,386 friends can feel unbearably alone. Sad. And I'm not, I mean, who knows? He suicidal probably for a number of reasons or factors, and might have happened even if he wasn't so online oriented. I certainly do not know, but kind of a grim thing. Well, thank you for listening. I've got Chris coming up. I don't know, we may have guests coming up. We've got more to get to, and have a good week.
It was event of the year, and I wish I had been there when we run riot all over Brixton. When we mash up empty police van, when we mash up the wicked one plan, when we mash up the swamp the one. They want, they make the rule of them understand that we not take no more of them oppression. And when we check out the ghetto grapevine, they find out all I could have find. Every rebel just a rebel in them story. Them a talk about the power and the glory. Them a talk about the burning and the looting. Them a talk about the smashing and the grabbing.